So, is it alright if I record you?
Okay. I guess.
Do you mind stating your name?
Catherine Dyer Dixon Herbert.
Okay. So, thank you so much for agreeing to participate in this project. It will surely benefit the community now and in the future. The goal of this questionnaire is to produce as detailed and coherent a narrative of your story as possible. In light of that, I encourage you to feel free to not worry about providing an answer that is too long or too in-depth. Okay, so, in what year were you born?
1949.
Okay, and where were you born?
Nashville. I think I was born in Nashville General Hospital.
Okay. And how do you define yourself in terms of racial and ethnic identity?
I'm black.
Okay. And what's the last level of schooling that you completed?
Master's.
And what was your master's in?
Education.
Okay.
Curriculum, I think. Development.
And where was that done?
Where? Middle Tennessee State University.
Okay. And are you married or have you ever been married?
I am married. Okay. Almost 38 years.
So tell me about where you grew up, like what your childhood was just generally like. Was it more...
I grew up in East Nashville, mm-hmm. on Myrtle Street. I had two brothers and a sister. My sister was 10 years older than me. My brothers were 4 and 5 years older than me. So I was the youngest, so mm-hmm. I was sort of, the brat, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I was kind of tomboyish because of my brothers so close. My sister was so much older than me that we didn't really play, mm-hmm. you know. But with my brothers, we did. And I was kind of had to fight them. And there was a lot of kids in the neighborhood. We were all close, and we all had a good time. Playing games, and we really played games when we were growing up. We kids today don't play games. We played hide and seek, but we did it at nighttime. Mm-hmm. And we were often out in the summertime, at midnight, playing hide and seek.
Yeah.
And we played daytime. We played games like Red Rover and Mother May I, and what else? Just a lot of different things. We rock school. We played hopscotch, but we played stick hopscotch. I don't know if a lot of people know what it is. It's where you line up some sticks, which is twigs. Mm-hmm. You line them up like that, and you'd have to jump between the sticks like that. Mm-hmm. And the second time, you have to jump 2 pencils. The next time, 3 pencils. I mean, not pencils, but it would be twigs. Mm-hmm. These are and marbles and jacks. We played all those kind of things. Pick up sticks.
Cool.
We had it going on, and we would go at each other's house and play, and we would. I remember my girlfriends and I across the street, they would come to the house and we call ourselves cooking. And we made the biggest mess we want to make. But we had the cornbread that looked like cake and we had cake that looked like cornbread, but we ate it.
Yeah.
We had fun. We used to put on little shows on my back porch. We had a back porch that was real big. And we called ourselves putting, because we were looking at Little Rascals. So uh-huh. We were trying to emulate them. And we would have shows and sing and dance and all that stuff. We buy crepe paper and make us Hawaiian grass skirts.
Uh-huh. That's tight.
We had fun. I used to sit on my back porch and I call myself singing opera. I don't know what I was thinking of. I think now how my neighbors must have just laughed at me back there hooping and hollering going on. But anyway. But I had a pretty normal, uh-huh. I think... We often did some stuff that we had no business doing, but, you know, we had fun.
Yeah. What, so was it, kind of like, was it like city-ish?
Or was it like suburban? Yeah, it was in the city. East Nashville on Myrtle Street. At the time when I was growing up, Myrtle Street was a dead end, but okay. After time they opened it up and they made, there was a Viaduct that was on Eastland, but they made a new Viaduct, made it Cleveland Street, made Cleveland Street come right across to, McFerrin. And so all the streets, Myrtle Street, Hard Street, and I think it was Neil, were no longer, well, Neil I think still is a dead end, but North 9th, Myrtle, and Hard were no longer dead end streets because okay. They made Cleveland Street come on across.
Okay.
Eastland's still there, but they made Eastland curve into Cleveland Street. So a lot of development happened while we were there. When I was growing up, we didn't have pavement, it was rocks on our street. So I didn't learn how to skate when I was growing up. And then finally they finally gave us sidewalks. Hmm. I still didn't learn, but my brothers learned how to skate. My sister learned to skate, but I never learned how to skate. Don't ask me why. I was in my 20s, I think, when I first tried to skate. And It was always rated for bicycles, but I didn't get my first bicycle until I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my brothers had one. And I used to ride my across the street neighbor's bicycles. That's how I learned how to ride a bicycle.
Hmm.
But we had a good time growing up. I think it was a good growing up.
Yeah.
Time.
Do you remember what you wanted to be when you grew up? Like if you had dreams for the future when you were a kid?
I used to think I wanted to be a businesswoman, but.
Mm-hmm.
Because Daddy worked at the National Bridge Company, and he would bring a lot of papers and pens and all that kind of stuff home, mm-hmm. and I used to pads and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I used to call myself being a businesswoman, but I had no earthly idea what I wanted to be when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I was in high school and I was a senior, they asked me, and I picked a stewardess.
Mm-hmm.
I just picked it. I didn't know why.
Yeah.
I went to college. I had no idea what I wanted to do or be. I picked education because of my teachers. I liked my teachers. And so I thought, okay, well, Miss Ford, I love social studies and history and all that, civics and whatnot. And so I said, let me do that. And I got out to Lipscomb, and they were the boringest folk in the whole wide world. Mm-hmm. So I changed it to speech and drama.
Okay.
Because of one of my teachers, Mr. Davis, he had a big effect on me. And I stuck with speech and drama, but after I graduated, there were no openings in speech and drama.
Okay.
I mean, they said that people kept those jobs until they died.
Right.
Or retired, whichever came first.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then I went back to school, went to UT Nashville, and got my certification in elementary ed.
Okay.
And it was really during my student teaching as a speech teacher that I really realized that I love teaching.
Right.
It was not until I did my student teaching. And I said, wow, I like this. And so that's what I stuck with. And I taught kindergarten for 6 years at my church daycare. I was a director and a kindergarten teacher. And then my husband was teaching here in Rutherford County, and he was getting tickets for being late all the time, so we decided to move here.
Mm-hmm.
Then I decided to try out for a job here. I got the job before we moved here. And so I've taught here for 30 years, but I've been retired for 3.
Okay.
So.
Did you teach at the same school here for 30 years? Or
no, my first 4 years were at Eagleville,
mm-hmm.
which I found out was where my family roots are from, in my Garrett book I made.
Okay.
And then I transferred to Smyrna Elementary. I was there for 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then the remaining of the years were at Blackman Elementary, which is right over here.
Okay.
If you came Fortress, you passed it.
I think I did
yeah,
see it.
It would have been on the left side.
Okay.
And I was there for about 8 or 9 years, whatever it is that comes up to 30.
Mm-hmm. And did you teach the same grade or different grades?
Oh, no. When I was at Eagleville, I taught a combination of grades. I would have split grades, like second and third split, mm-hmm. or fourth and third split, or fourth and fifth, you know.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, he gave me, in other words, he gave me the low kids from whatever split classes they were.
Okay.
He would get whatever the number was for third grade, let's say 25. If she had 27 or if she had 30 kids, I got the balance of those kids. And for that grade, and then for the next grade, I got those, and I taught those kids.
Okay. That makes sense.
So I had split low. That's what they call it.
Split low. So when you were, did your parents have any kind of things that they wanted you to do when you grew up? Like any goals for you?
Oh, my dad did. He wanted me a dentist, but anything he wanted me to be, I didn't want to be. So
sounds pretty typical.
And Mama didn't. Mm-hmm. She didn't say anything. She was whatever I wanted to be. That's what. The only thing I remember my mama pushing me was when I was a senior. And she went to my music teacher and told her I want her to sing a solo. Because I was in chorus and I would not sing a solo. I wouldn't volunteer on anything. And that year, Miss Dawson had me singing. I sung Ave Maria. I sung two other songs that I would not have done if my mama hadn't pushed it.
Mm-hmm.
She made me sing. So I did.
That's cool. So the offer wasn't so, like, perfect. So what schools did you go to?
Well, my first education, besides with my mom, I had kindergarten, Miss Alma K. Dowell was my kindergarten teacher. And I have a picture of that in my in my book that I made. And then I had, this is crazy. For first grade, I had about three or four different teachers.
Wow. Why?
Well, I didn't know until about, just before my mother died, she died in 05. I asked her, why did I have so many first grade teachers? And she said, I was obnoxious and they couldn't stand me.
Oh, wow.
The teachers didn't like me.
But they shuffled you.
Said I was bossy. Until I got to Miss Shoemaker. Miss Shoemaker had me for first, second, and third grade. Uh-huh. I love Miss Shoemaker. Still do. She's Mrs. What is her name? I can't think what her name is now. She married. She's still alive. And then for fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, I had Mrs. McKissick. Mm-hmm. And then Miss McKissick left. She got pregnant and left. And I think I had Miss Fields for about 3 months, which I couldn't stand her. But anyway, only teacher that I didn't like. And then for seventh grade, my homeroom teacher was Mr. Baker, Rogers Baker, and he just died about a year or two ago. And he was my homeroom teacher. Mm-hmm. And then for my, we had clusters. It was first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth. Mm-hmm. Seventh, eighth, and ninth was Mr. Baker. And then 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, I had Mr. Gray as my homeroom teacher.
Mm-hmm. And what was the name of your high school?
Meigs High School.
Okay.
In East Nashville. I think it's now a magnet school.
Okay.
And I think they've torn it down and built a new one.
And what was the name of your primary school? Or your?
It was all the same school.
It was all the same. Okay.
Meigs went from first grade to 12th grade.
Okay.
It didn't always. At one time, Meigs only went to ninth grade, and then you would have to go catch a bus and go to Pearl.
Okay.
My sister went to Pearl.
Okay.
But by the time me and my brothers came along, they had made Meigs a high school.
Okay. And how did you get to school?
Walk.
Okay.
I had about 7-8 blocks I had to walk. Rain, snow, or shine.
And what were some of your, like, favorite subjects?
Social studies.
Okay.
That was because Ms. Ford. I love math too when I had Mr. Hatfield. Mr. Hatfield was awesome. He left Meigs and went to teach at TSU. Mm-hmm. But he would teach us in seventh grade trigonometry, geometry. I mean, and at that time I knew all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But by the time I got to 10th grade, and instead of me sticking with Mr. Hatfield, I went to the easy teacher who everybody said, get Ms. Patton, she doesn't give homework. Mm-hmm. Biggest mistake of my life. Biggest mistake. Yeah. Didn't learn a thing that year.
What was the racial or ethnic background of your classmates? Was this?
Oh, it was all black.
Okay,
this
so it was
before integration.
Okay. Did you play any like sports, or were you in any clubs, activities, after school stuff?
I was in a chorus. I was in a drama club. They didn't have too much girl sports. Mm-hmm. There were no girl sports at Meigs. Mm. There were only boys sports. Mm. Basketball and football. That was it.
Do you remember who any of your, like, good friends were at the time?
Oh, yeah. Still kicking.
Yeah?
Yeah. One was Pat Walker. We were together since kindergarten.
Okay.
And we were always in the same homeroom all the way up. Mm-hmm. All the way from first grade, from kindergarten all the way to 12th grade. Another good friend was Hattie Graham. She wasn't in my homeroom, but we were still good friends. Lanny Babb. Let me see. Alice Frazier. Hey, Brenda Parker. There was quite a few of us. We still see each other every now and then. I'm trying to think, did I leave somebody off? Probably did, but anyway.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of stuff would you do for fun at high school?
Couldn't do a whole lot. My dad was very strict. They would have school dances, basketball games, football games. Mm-hmm. I was a cheerleader for a while. That was about it. Mm-hmm. In the summer, they would have programs at that time, and Miss Shoemaker was part of that. And they'd have these, it was called the circus every year, and I would participate in the circus every year. Mm-hmm. And my mama would make the costumes, and my mom was a seamstress. And I participated in that and going to the park and everything. But Mm-hmm. And I think I ran track one summer.
So with your parents, so what was your mother's occupation? You said she was a seamstress. Is that what she did for a living, or was that just
no? It's on just the something side? She did on yeah. the side. My mama basically was a housewife, but then she would do domestic work, you know, clean folks' house, mm-hmm. and she would take me. And after I got up, Mama decided to go to Miss Dowell. I think encouraged Mama to start working at the daycare. They didn't call it daycare then; they called it kindergarten. So Mama started working at the kindergarten. I'm trying to think, this was after I graduated from high school. And then she worked there, and I think, Grayson Meaton. She worked at Grayson Meaton as a kindergarten teacher. She worked at West End Methodist Church Kindergarten for a mm-hmm. while. And, because see, you know, they didn't have to have a college education, because Mama just had a high school education. Mm-hmm. And, she wound up working with me
okay.
at the cool. daycare. Yeah, she worked for me.
And what was your father's occupation again? You said it was
okay. My daddy, this is crazy because I don't really understand it. I know he was a janitor at the bridge company, and then he went from being a janitor to being over the mail room. He, on the side, he would cook for the Mr. Dyer. They would have excursions to Old Hickory Lake, mm-hmm. and they would, you know, spend the night and stuff like that, and Daddy would cook, mm-hmm. and we would work with him. Mama started off, then my sister, then me, my mm-hmm. brothers. We all worked with Daddy, cooking for these folks, slaving. It wasn't slavery, though, because actually, Mr. Dad paid him. I didn't realize how much money people made back in the 60s, and he paid them quite well. Mm-hmm. Daddy, as a janitor, made $500 a month. Mm-hmm. This is back in the 60s. And I didn't know that was good, but yeah. it was good. And so, but I also heard that was hush money, too. Because Mr. Dyer, he was going with his secretary.
Oh.
Well, I shouldn't say this, because his father is A.J. Dyer, who gave some money to Vanderbilt, didn't he?
Oh, really? Oh, this is all confidential, don't worry.
I hope so. But I know he gave the that telescope thing that sees the stars, what do you uh-huh. call that? That's A.J. Dye. He did that. But this is that's Harry Dye I'm talking about. But anyway, no, I shouldn't have said that. But anyway, so Daddy made good money mm-hmm. for whatever reason. But Daddy, I think he finished third grade, but somehow he must have gotten back in school because I think he played football.
Okay.
But he didn't finish high school.
Okay. And where are your parents from?
Nashville.
Okay.
Daddy, I think, we don't know much about Daddy. Daddy's mother was, they said, mulatto, which meant she could pass for white, and his dad was black. But they didn't raise him.
Okay.
Mama Lula raised Daddy. Mama Lula was part Indian and part black. And she raised him, and she was rough. She was a rough cuss. But when he was older, he searched and tried to find out who his parents were. He found out that his mother and his father married. And I think after that, he was okay. Mm-hmm. But what happened to them, we don't know. Mm-hmm. When I said one of these days I would, you know, start looking up. But I haven't, you know. I've looked up stuff and haven't found anything, so.
Yeah. Huh.
But he always had that, I guess, in the back of his mind of who he was. And once he found out, we went to Gallatin. So he must have been born in Sumner County.
Okay.
When he found their marriage, you know, mm-hmm. license or whatever, then that sort of satisfied them.
Right. Huh. What kind of, how did your family, like, discipline you?
Whipped us.
Okay.
We got whippings.
And what about in school? How were kids disciplined?
You were whipped? I never got a whipping at school. Mm-hmm. I got sent to the office a couple times for talking. But all they had to do was say my daddy's name and that was it. Mm-hmm. But they whipped.
Mm-hmm. What were some of your favorite, like, songs, bands, things like that growing up that you can remember?
Hmm. When I was little, I don't know. I looked at TV a lot.
Or TV shows.
Movies.
TV shows, movies, too. That's another one.
My Little Margie, Boston Blackie, The Creaking Door. What else was on TV? Whatever was on TV, I looked at it. Mm-hmm. I was raised on the TV. I didn't pay attention to songs until probably the late 50s, early 60s. And I had my first dance to Smokey Robinson's song,
I don't like you, but I want you.
Yeah.
I want to spend
you really day gotta hold
without
on me.
You. Oh, I think I was about the seventh grade.
I love that song.
That's when I start paying attention. Then I know in high school we used to sing Going to the Chapel like crazy all the time, harmonizing everything. But everything, you know, all Motown, you know, all that, Under the Boardwalk, all that stuff, all that. Everything in the 60s, that's when I think one of my favorites when I really started liking stuff was this song by War. I can't even think of the name of it now, but that's when, then, of course, in the 70s, you know, Date My Husband, it was Harold Melvin in the Blue Notes with, what's his name that just died? In the wheelchair.
Oh,
I can't think of his name, but, and the OJs, they were my favorites. And then the four, hello.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Four Tops.
Mm-hmm.
All those.
Yeah.
All those. Everything.
Huh. What about, favorite foods growing up?
Food. Okay, my dad, when he cooked, you have to realize he cooked for rich people.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned how to develop rich people's taste. So leg of lamb, mint gravy, mint sauce, and choupette corn, squash, the way he fixed it. Peach cobbler a la mode. I'm naming the meal that he fixed, green beans. And that was my favorite of his foods that he cooked.
Yeah.
Except for I did love the, he would fix the great snapper. Either he could fry it or he could broil it. It was good. This, whatever daddy fixed. Now, of mama's foods, I think spaghetti. We had mackerel croquettes. We were talking about, they were awesome. Of course, you know, I don't eat none of that stuff now. I'm vegetarian now, but when I was growing up, and turnip greens, I didn't like turnip greens when I was little because I found a worm in it one time. And so I just would not eat them.
Yes, I could see that.
It just turned me. But my dad would make us eat stuff like, what's those things supposed to be? Oysters, chitlins. I didn't like none of it. And one time he brought a tub full of chitlins, fresh from a killing, and we had to take a hose pipe and clean that stuff out. I never ate another chitlin. Never ate another one, and I didn't eat nothing else, anything that I didn't want to eat. He would fix brains, scrambled brains, hog brains, all that stuff, souse. I did it when I was little because I didn't have a choice, but as soon as I could make up my own mind and do what I want to do, that was off my list. Hated that stuff.
Yeah.
But as far as my favorite was leg of lamb. He could cook it. Oh, my Lord, he could cook it. Of course, steaks, too. He would always get steaks this thick. And pork chops at that time. And what else did Daddy fix so good? Leg of lamb was my favorite.
Was there, like, one meal that was, like, I guess, like, the biggest meal you'd have each day or that you'd all share together?
We all sat down to dinner together. Always. Breakfast, not lunch, but dinner.
So did you travel at all during your youth or much?
My dad, we went on weekend trips. That's all he knew. We'd go to Canada, we'd go to Detroit, we'd go to Chicago, where we had people that we knew. My dad's girlfriend, we found out, lived in Canada. We didn't know that, but my sister did, but I didn't. She told me later on. And we'd go wherever my brothers were. When they got into service, we went wherever they were, and that would have been, well, Wes was at Fort Campbell, and that was nowhere. But my brother Joe was in, I may be wrong with the name of it, but it was in Kansas City. Maybe Richard Gabor Air Force Base, I'm not sure if that was the name of it. We went there. So we did a lot of weekend travel. Oh, Wichita. We went to Wichita. That was farther west I've ever been with Daddy. It was Wichita,
And how was that? I mean, was it fun or enjoyable? Or?
It was okay. I was a teenager, so it was strange because he went to visit. My dad was in the Civil Air Patrol. He was ranked as a major there. And he had a friend that he had taught how to fly. And then Mr. Gooch went out there and started his own company. Mm-hmm. He bought a plane, and I don't know what he did, but he had a company and where he flew. And yeah. So I got to know his daughter, Camilla Gooch. And she took me to the party, which I felt absolutely oopid stay about because I'd never gone to a party. Uh-huh. It was in these people's basement, and there was all this lights were down low and people dancing, and I'm standing in the corner scared. All I wanted to do was go home. I just felt totally out of it because I wasn't used to it.
Yeah.
Only dances I've parties I've been to was at school, mm-hmm. and my brothers were always there.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was an experience I'll never forget. But that was in Wichita.
Yeah.
I understand she lives in Texas now.
Do you move at all as a kid, or were you in the same place?
Same house.
Same house. Okay.
My daddy built a house.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
As an adult, have you done much traveling?
Yeah.
For like business or pleasure?
I had planned on doing some traveling. Before I met my husband, and that money that I was saving for that wound up being for my wedding. But Joe came from his background was different from mine, and they didn't do anything. So, but he finally got to the point that he wanted to travel, so we would go and visit, if you want to call this traveling, his daddy in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. You would have to know, I've been to Cleveland every year for 38 years. We just came back.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, this past weekend I was in Cleveland, but my middle son had his baby blessed in Cleveland uh-huh. this past weekend because the pastor there was the pastor that when he and his wife were before they married, they were being counseled by him. Mm-hmm. And then he married them, so they wanted him to bless the baby.
Okay.
So everybody went up there, and all my husband's sisters, he has six sisters, all of them brought their family, and we all were up there for that. So that was real nice. But Cleveland was the first place my husband and I went to. We went to New York. We've been to Atlanta. That was a honeymoon. And I was expecting a boat trip, a cruise, and uh-huh. we went to Atlanta. But anyway, you know, I played it off. Okay. Let me see, uh-huh. where else? Then when the boys got older, he started going to places. We went to New Orleans. We went to Houston. We've been to Dallas. He took them to Canada. We went to, did we go to St. Louis? I think so, because each time we went to their, wherever it is that they had a baseball field, a football field, or mm-hmm. whatever, like that. We've been to, I'm trying to think, where have we been with him? Now, I have been to Europe, mm-hmm. but my husband, he says too much water for him to drink. So I went to, in 95, I went to Europe, I went to London, I went to, I can't think of these places, Paris. What's the capital of Holland?
Amsterdam, or?
Amsterdam, thank you. And there was one more place. Right by Germany, between France and Germany, Luxembourg.
Okay.
I went there, and that was cool. I enjoyed that. And then I came back, and I determined I was going to start traveling. So I went to Bermuda. I stayed in Bermuda for about a week. I went to the Bahamas. How long did we stay in the Bahamas? 5 days. And since then, I enjoyed. My husband wouldn't go. I thought, "Tough titty, I'm going." Mm-hmm. And I took my family when I retired. I took my whole family on a cruise. We went to the Bahamas, and let me see, where have we been since then? I've taken them to Hilton Head. Last year, I took them to Panama City Beach, mm-hmm. and this year, we're going to Myrtle Beach. So, mm-hmm. I try to take them somewhere every year. I use part of my retirement money. Mm-hmm. I save it and take them somewhere. Nice. So, yeah, I like to travel, but I'm going to have to do more because my husband doesn't.
He just likes traveling a lot, yeah.
He didn't like to travel. He did fly to, we flew to Orlando one time. Mm-hmm. But if you can't drive, he don't want to go. Mm-hmm.
That's funny.
Oh, yeah, really? Because we went to Chicago this weekend to pick up his new car. And then I had to drive all the way to Cleveland and then all the way home by myself because he wanted his car.
How did you guys meet?
He was in a hospital and I worked at a Riverside hospital. He was coming in to get his tonsils done.
You picked him up as a patient? That's funny.
And it was during the holidays, and so nobody was hardly there, so we spent a lot of time talking mm-hmm. after I did my rounds. I was a nurse's aide. Mm-hmm. And we just spent a lot of time talking. Afterwards, he got my number and we started dating. I think it was our first date. New Year's, I guess. I can't remember now. It's getting foggy.
And what does he do?
Right now, he is a director of adult ed for Rutherford County.
Okay.
But he started out as a PE teacher and coach at Kittrell School. Then he went to Riverdale as assistant principal for about 12 years. Mm-hmm. And he went back to Kittrell as principal mm-hmm. for another 12 or 15 years. And then he left Kittrell, and he's now adult ed, director of adult ed.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
And, well, I know you mentioned you have kids, but how many children do you have?
I have three sons, Joseph the second, Bryant, and Timothy.
Cool. And do they live in
Timothy Tennessee, is in Tampa, Florida. Bryant lives in Nashville, but he teaches here in Rutherford County.
Okay.
He's also associate pastor of South Nashville Church
okay. In
on Tusculum, mm-hmm. off Nolensville Road. And JoJo lives here with us.
Okay.
And he has his own business. He's a lawn care person right now. Mm-hmm. Although he's highly educated, mm-hmm. but he's made some mistakes in his life, and that's kind of held him back.
Mm-hmm.
So he started his own business, and he's doing good so far.
And you said you have one grandkid, right?
Mm-mm. I have one grandson.
Oh, right, duh. Obviously, there's
five
girls in there.
Granddaughters.
Okay.
just had one in March, the last one, Brynn. But I have Simeon, Asa, Tony, Isabella, A. Marie, and Brynn.
Okay.
So I have six all together.
Cool. That's great. Oh, I forgot about that. Next question. Thinking of your parents again, do you feel like, are there any like kind of like special sayings or that they had, or, like proverbs that they were like known for?
A whole bunch of stuff they say that I say now, like you ain't got pot to pee in, wouldn't throw it out. They had all kinds of sayings, and mm-hmm. you know, and things to encourage us. My father wanted me to get an education so that I wouldn't have to take anything off of anybody,
mm-hmm.
you know, be able to support myself. Mama was also gifted. She was a craft person. She was a seamstress.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother was a seamstress, and come to find out her, I guess Mama Jess was a seamstress, and so was Mama Jess's sister. And that's really weird because Mama Jessie, which is my mother's grandmother, was pot white, pot Indian. Her sister was white.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Mama Jessie married a black man. And then Mama Cora, her daughter, married Papa, who's a black man. So we got black and white on both sides mm-hmm. of my family. And I think Joe got a little bit on his, too. But Mama, and automatically, they almost been gifted. The Mama could do macrame. She could do any kind of art project. She mm-hmm. was just good at it. And I could, but I don't do it like she does.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, but that's the word I'm trying to say. I don't delve into it like she does. But
mm-hmm.
I thought when we were doing this art thing with the, I thought they were going to teach us how to paint, but they didn't. It was okay. But I thought we were going to learn how to paint, but we didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Matter of fact, I have one painting up on this wall. Not that one. That was my daddy's girlfriend's painting back there. There's a pink picture right here that I painted, about 15, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but this guy was teaching me. I was at the old folks center.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to start taking lessons again. I want to learn that. That chair right there is full of art stuff that I plan on one of these days.
That's tight.
Get into it. But I started teaching my grandchildren. Where is theirs? They did some watercolor the other day. I did a little bit right there. See right there?
Oh, this one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
so as you see, I don't know what the hand I'm doing, but I'm starting.
No, that's awesome.
I'm starting. I drew my husband's picture back there.
Okay.
So I think I got all this from my mom.
Mm-hmm.
But Dad, if he were alive, he'd say I got it from him.
Because mm-hmm.
he'd say I got my voice from him. Whatever.
Artistic inclination.
Except I never heard him sing, so.
What do you feel like is the most important lesson that your parents taught you?
Hard work.
Mm-hmm.
Be the best that you can be. You know, take care of your home.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, everything they taught me. I mean, I look back now, Even though I thought Dad was mean and everything, now I realize he was just trying to protect me from the elements of the world that is rough out there, stuff out there. He wanted me to make something of myself so I could stand on my own 2 feet.
Yeah.
I go back to my grandmother, though, Mama Lula, who raised him. I didn't know she was sowing seeds, but she would, every day she would come to the dinner table. Her blessing, you know how you say grace or something, mm-hmm. or scripture, hers, so it's remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And it wasn't until my sister, when I was at Riverside, my sister was in nursing school. Mm-hmm. They used to have a nursing school. And when she became that, there was Seventh-day Adventist, and I didn't know that. And she started taking lessons and Bible studies, and I fought it the whole time. Until I went to Lipscomb, which is a Christian school, and I started studying the Bible, and mm-hmm. I started looking up stuff. Mm-hmm. I even asked my professors, and they couldn't deny that it was still the Sabbath, but we don't keep it because the Catholics changed it and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I said, who gave them the authority to change it? Nobody. So I studied, and my sister said Mama Lula was Seventh-day Adventist. I said, what? I grew up, and I didn't know my grandmother was Seventh-day Adventist because she never threw it on us, you know? Mm-hmm. She didn't force it on us. My other grandmother on Mama's side was Baptist, so I grew up Baptist. Mm-hmm. And Daddy was Baptist, but Daddy was raised Seventh-day Adventist, but he left the church.
Okay.
And so my sister joined church, and my daddy rejoined in 1970, and then when did I join? In 71, I joined.
Okay.
And then after that, Mama joined. And then after that, one of my brothers joined. One of my other brothers never did join. But anyway, we all came, and it turned out that Daddy's real mother and father were Seventh-day Adventists as well.
Okay. That's funny.
Didn't know that. I didn't know none of that. I learned all that stuff later on in life, but I thought, wow, interesting. And it was interesting. I do remember when my grandfather, Dad Ernest, died, when my sister, in her efforts to indoctrinate me into the church and everything, she took me to hear this choir called the Ebony Ensemble. Mm-hmm. And it was at this church, and I went to the church, and I said, going up the steps, I said, this church looks familiar. I feel like I've been here before. Mm-hmm. She said, this is the church where Dad Ernest's funeral was. And I said, Dad Ernest was Adventist? She said, yeah. I remember that. I was 5 years old, but I remember that church just as clear because I remember the man I thought was an Indian going mm-hmm. up and down the aisle doing the Indian thing, but mm-hmm. he was shouting, but I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he was shouting, but he was shouting, but I thought he was doing an Indian dance.
Yeah.
That was my childish imagination. Yeah, yeah. That's why I don't believe everything people say that happened to them because you're seeing it through a child's eyes.
Yeah.
And children don't see things quite the way that it is.
Right.
I think when Michael Jackson said his daddy beat him, his daddy whipped his behind. He probably needed it. Because you think it's beating, but it's not beating. They're just whipping you.
Yeah.
You know, but people see things differently when you're a child. And I remember, I used to call my dad Ernest, Dern Ernest. Got that. His name was Dern Ernest, but his name was Dad Ernest.
Yeah.
That was through a child's eyes.
Yeah.
You know, we saw things differently. So you have to be careful how you say. You have to learn how to learn all the circumstances and ask questions. And that's where I regret not asking enough questions about my family background. But one thing that this program did do was spark an interest in my. I never knew my great grandfather's name. Now I know his name. Mm-hmm. I know he was buried in Alisona. And one of these days, I got to go over there and check out his grave mm-hmm. if it's marked.
Right.
But anyway, how did I get there? But whatever.
So, well, what do you practice? Do you still go to church?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I figured. But what?
Seventh-day Adventist.
Seventh-day Adventist, okay. Mm-hmm. Nice.
All my children are. My grandchildren are, but my husband is not.
Mm-hmm. Does he go to church? Or
yeah, he goes to church. First Baptist.
Baptist, okay. So, did your family own property when you were growing up?
They owned the land that they were living on.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather owned his land, but when my grandfather died, Mom Luba sold it and went to live with her grandchildren.
Mm-hmm. And did anyone in your family ever share a crop, someone else's land, that you know of? Or was anyone a farmer,
you know, I don't know. On Daddy's side, I have the foggiest idea, but on Mama's side, from what I can find, I don't know about my great-grandfather, but my grandfather had a business. He had a dry cleaners at one time, and he had a restaurant at one time.
Mm-hmm.
So they were city dwellers. They left Eagleville and stayed in Nashville.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So as far as I know, no. I mean, it may have been somewhere down the road. From what I understand, you know, automatically, of course, he was born in 1845. My great-grandfather, mm-hmm. he had to have been off of somebody's farm to be from Eagleville, Alisona right, area. Right.
Back at the time.
Because there was nothing there, still isn't.
So while you were growing up, what were you told about slavery?
What was I told about slavery? What I knew about slavery is what I saw on TV. Mm-hmm. And talk about stuff like that.
And, like, I guess, do you know or were you ever told if any of your ancestors were ever
okay,
slaves?
Now, did... No. As far as I know, automatically, Charlie Garrett must have been a slave. But then I don't know. Mm-hmm. Because they never talk about that. I know that Mama Justin was born in like 1870 something, so that was after slavery. Mm-hmm. And I can't go back any further on Mama's side, but 1845 is as far the furthest back I've been. But there's no mention of slavery at all, because automatically he married. I don't know if he married in Nashville or mm-hmm. where he married, but they lived in Nashville.
Right.
I have him on the 1900 census as living in Nashville.
Okay.
Before that, I don't know too much. And Mom and them never said anything about them, anybody being a slave.
Hmm. What was the relationship between whites and blacks when in your community growing up?
There were no whites. Well, yes, it was. I'm so sorry. There was a man directly across the street from us, Mr. Oney Harris. Mm-hmm. I couldn't figure out if that man was black or white. Mm-hmm. But I knew his wife was, but she was mixed. Mm-hmm. But I think Mr. Harris was white. Mm-hmm. That met he. Mama said he met her. They were from Clarksville. He was automatically was in the army. So I think Mr. Harris was white and Miss Harris was black. But it was, you know, that wasn't very popular back then. And so he lived in our neighborhood, a black neighborhood. And they kept to themselves, mm-hmm. everything.
Yeah,
it was really strange. And then she had a sister, but her sister, who was mixed also. But she married a black man. And eventually, I think Mr. Hare, I think they're still alive. He moved into the same area. It's an area called Enchanted Hills in Nashville where okay. blacks live. Upper middle class blacks.
Okay.
Off of Clark the Highway. They live out there now.
Okay.
He's still alive. But Mr. Harris is white.
Huh. Did you ever have any experiences with discrimination like growing up? Like...
Not until I went to Lipscomb.
Okay. And then what was that like?
Somebody behind me called me a nigger. And I turned around and I said, you better be careful. I might be your sister. Hmm. And they never called me a nigger again. Hmm. That's the only I've ever had. Nobody ever called me a nigger again.
Hmm. Were there other... So did you say you have to go at 9:45?
He does. Simeon, what time is it?
It might be getting close. That's why I just wanted okay. to double check.
Wow. Well, I just got to take him over to Blackman so you can wait if you want.
Okay. Is that all right? It's 9:42. Yeah.
Simeon! Time for you to go.
All right, I'm going to... Okay. So were there other... were there any other elders in your community that were important? Or that played a big role in your life?
You know, all of our... The block that I lived on, we were like a family.
Okay.
Everybody, all the kids, our block, we lived on Myrtle Street, and we call us the Myrtle Street Gang, mm-hmm. because everybody was family. Mm-hmm. But there were a few people on there we didn't know, or my parents knew, but the kids didn't know. But my uncles, my aunts, my grandparents, all mm-hmm. had a big part in my life, but everybody kept everybody in line. Mm-hmm. You know, we obeyed other folk just like we did our parents, you know.
And so, your family in town, like, how close was your family around besides, like, just your...
Well, how much family did you have, on my mother's side, they lived near the Meg School, so they were about 6-7 blocks away.
Okay.
My grandmother, when we were growing up, she just lived right behind us on my dad's side. They live right behind us, so the family was always there. My cousins, I didn't really have but one set of cousins, and they lived on the other side of town.
Okay.
My uncle used to live within just a few blocks of us when he married. Mm-hmm. But basically, we're all in the same East Nashville area.
Okay. And I don't know, I can't remember if I asked this before, but where were your grandparents from?
As far as I know, on my father's side, well, my mother's, my real grandparents, the mother, I think she was a Rogan. Her name was Ella Rogan. Mm-hmm. She was from Sumner County. I think my daddy's real grandfather was from Nashville because he found out that he had a cousin, a niece, and he began to get close to her. But Mama Lula, who raised him, she was from, she was part Indian. She was from the Springfield area. On Mama's side, Mama Jessie and Aunt Cora were originally from Nashville. Mm-hmm. They were raised by white people because I guess they were part white, whatever. I don't know what that was. And Papa, they were from Eagleville, but they lived in Nashville, moved mm-hmm. to Nashville, so everybody was in the Nashville area.
Okay.
Nobody was far away. All my folks were right in Nashville area.
Okay.
Eagleville is in Springfield, was far away in Sumner County.
Okay.
So everybody was right here.
And what do you feel like is, like, the most important life, like, lesson that your grandparents kind of, like, gave you or instilled in you, if there was something?
Be obedient.
Obedient?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
My grandmother and mama's side would just look at me. You know, if I was doing something wrong, all she had to do was squint her eyes. And I would straighten up. So I think obedience was part of it. But family was important, too. I remember we would spend the night at Mama Lula's house. This is Saturday night. Eat breakfast with Mama Lula, go to home and eat breakfast. And on my way to church, stop at Mama Cora's and eat breakfast. And on the way home, we eat dinner with Mama Cora and then come home and eat dinner. So we were tight.
Yeah.
We had, you know, it was, I loved our family. And that's one of the things I liked about our family is we gathered and had a good time together.
Are you still close nowadays or?
Well, they're just about all gone now. Mm. I have one set of cousins. Well, two. One's in Louisville. And we're actually three on Mama's side. One, they're in, another set is in, what's that name of the place? Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
With Cheyenne or Casper, one of them.
Okay.
And then Louisville, I have a set of cousins in Louisville who I really don't know that well. And then I have one, well, it's two left here in town, in Nashville, that I'm close to. On my father's side, of course, I don't know any of his real relatives. But the ones that, who, the race team that he grew up with, they live in Akron. I just saw them this weekend at the baby blessing.
Right, right.
And there was another one in Atlanta, but he died. His name was Maurice Pennington, and he was a civil rights activist in Atlanta at one time. But he passed about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. His wife is still alive. She was gorgeous. She was a beautiful black woman. Mm-hmm. Do I have pictures of her loose somewhere? But anyway. But not many of us left. Mm. At one time we were a big family, but not anymore. Everybody's dying out. All my family's dead.
Wow.
My father in 75. My brother, my oldest brother died in 94. My next brother died in 98. My sister died in 04. My mother died 5 months later. In 05. So I'm the only one left in my family.
Wow.
And that's about it. And then, of course, I'm, you know, my husband's family, they dying out slowly, too. So I think he and one other cousin and his uncle, the only ones left in that generation.
Mm-hmm.
There's younger ones, but, you know, we don't keep up with them. My children keep up with them, but we don't.
What about,
you know, you were asking something they instilled in us too was church, going to church.
Yeah.
I mean, even as a Baptist, I mean, I went to church from a little bitty thing. I can tell you the songs that I learned when I was in Sunday school.
Uh-huh.
But going to church was a big thing also with our family.
Yeah. What were the songs?
Well, one was Bubbling Over. You remember that? Bubbling over, my cup is full and bubbling over. Uh-huh. Since the Lord saved me, I am happy as can be. My cup is full and bubbling over.
I can do the hand motions too.
But yeah, yeah. What about?
I felt like my Baptist training was very good. I thought my church, it was First Baptist East Nashville. I thought they did an excellent job in working with kids and indoctrinating them into the Lord.
What do you remember about like shopping or going shopping when you were younger?
I remember going with my mom and dad and them holding me and lifting me up and over the sidewalk, you know, to get up on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And shop, walking downtown, riding the bus, riding the back of the bus, and going shopping downtown, going through the arcade, begging for popcorn or peanuts or something, because you used to have a popcorn stand right there at arcade on Fifth Avenue. Woolworths, I remember what was the name of the different places? Woolworth, and oh, I can't think of all the different stores, but we weren't allowed to be at the counter. So I guess that's, you know, before integration, of course, and that's what I remember. The water fountains were all, it was colored, you know, we couldn't, the bathrooms, I remember going to the movies, going down the alley, going in the back, and going upstairs to the balcony. What else? With mom and daddy. I mean, you know, I remember when daddy took us out of town, it was a whole different situation. Because daddy could pass for whatever he wanted to pass for, and we'd go into regular restaurants. We couldn't go into restaurants down here. But we went out of town, we did.
So what was that like for you? Like, what was your impression of that?
It just the way it was. You know, you accepted it. That's the way it was. My daddy was not into civil rights and all that kind of stuff. He simply accepted the way life was. And mama was too. But I remember during the 60s, I remember my brother slipped away from school and participated in the boycotts and stuff downtown. I was scared to do it. I didn't do it. Because I was scared daddy was going to whip us, but he didn't whip them.
No.
So I think basically he was for it. But because of his position, because of him not having formal education and everything, I thought he felt like he shouldn't. But he didn't tell me none of that. That's just my thinking.
Right, right. Retrospectively, what did you, what were your thoughts on, I guess, like the, like as integration started to happen, what was like your impression?
I thought it was cool. But it was good what was happening, but racism was still alive. It's still alive now.
Yeah.
It's more alive now than ever before. I thought it was good because we deserved it.
Yeah.
You know, we're all equal. It's just like when you come with this homosexual thing, I don't think homosexual is right, but neither is stealing, neither is killing. You know, it's wrong, but, it, you know, you choose what path you want to take. And they have rights just like we have rights. They have a right to work and to live and to die just like anybody else. I don't, you know, that's on them. But civil rights should be for everybody. Everybody. And so, yeah, I thought it was cool. You know, when we, in the 70s, we, you know, we thought we were coming out of darkness, you know what I mean? And we were. And our kids today, they know nothing about what we had to go through. They know nothing. They don't know what it's like. They have no idea of all the stuff that we went through when we were growing up. But it was great coming out of darkness. Been in darkness so long. Even though while you were in darkness, you were protected and you were well taken care of and everything. But then you had this new life that was before us. But it wasn't that really new, because when you started working with people, you found out there's still prejudice. They don't want us here, you know?
Right. So we, I have two questions. Well, so when you say protected, what do you mean?
I mean, our parents took care of us. They made sure that we had everything we needed. They made sure we were educated. They made sure they did everything that they knew how to do to prepare us for basically the life that they had been accustomed to. And then when the doors started opening up for us, you know, they encouraged us to pursue, but we still had to deal with prejudice,
right,
with racism. You know, it's still there. It was there when I was, you know, it was there because you were only black. At Eagleville, I was only black at my school.
when I went to Smyrna. Well, there's a few more. Uh-huh. But Mr. Carlton, who was our principal, he wasn't a prejudiced person. Uh-huh. And he believed in everybody having rights, and he had several blacks. And I remember it kept increasing and increasing, then it started decreasing after he left, you know what I mean? It just depends who's in charge. And like now you find schools here in Rutherford County, there's not very many schools that have more than one or two blacks. Mm-hmm. Miss Ford might, because she's black. Mm-hmm. But you go to the white schools, I mean, when I say white schools, schools where there are white principals, you're going to find just a token. Mm-hmm. They don't want to hire you, and they don't. They don't have to, so they don't.
And you also said before that you feel like it's like, that I guess like it's worse now?
Yeah, it's just more undercover. Mm. It's just undercover. It's like, and what's so bad about it is when Obama got in, that's when people began to let it slip out. They didn't mean for it to slip out, but it came out. Because, mm-hmm. let's just tell the truth, they can't stand it that a black man's president.
Right.
And they would do anything they can to get him out of the office. Mm-hmm. Whatever it takes, that's what they would do. And that's how I feel.
Yeah.
And I said, it's a shame. You think that we get to that point that maybe, you know, brotherly love would kick in somewhere. But some people that, I don't know if it's fear. I don't know what it is, but They just don't know how to accept people for people. When you teach, like I have had to teach, and most of my students are white, you don't see color anymore.
Yeah.
You see people. But then somebody kicks in and make you realize prejudice is still alive. Because I used to do a little thing where I would, wouldn't let the boys go outside and play, but I let the girls go outside and play to teach about prejudice.
Yeah.
I had a parent that was upset about that. That I didn't have a right to teach his child. That was his job and all this kind of stuff. And after that, I had to stop doing it.
Wow.
My principal said, no, don't do it anymore. But I was trying to teach him about prejudice.
Yeah.
And I did it for over 20-something years. And then I had, my last few years, I had to stop because with these sensitive people who didn't want their, you know. And I knew, you know, basically when somebody comes in your room, parents, you can sense those who are prejudiced and those who aren't.
Right.
You know, because the ones who are not, they want to help you. They want to do everything. Then, you know, some of them may want to just keep an eye on me, too. But at least they're putting forth some type of an effort. But some of them, you know, they just, you know, they're just cold. And you can sense it. So, but you just, you know, hey, that's the way it is. I pray every morning. I worship every morning. I ask for God's protective cover. And to give me knowledge, wisdom, and understanding to work with. I went to school at 6 o'clock in the morning just to pray and spend time and ask and meditate and ask the Lord to be with me and give me the right words to say and know how to work with my students and my parents. Mm-hmm. Just to get the strength and energy that I needed to get through the day.
Yeah.
Because you ran into all kinds of stuff. All kinds of stuff, you know, from parents. So you just learn how to deal with it. You learn, you know, you hit it when you can. And you want to smack it, but you realize it's not the way to do it when people are ugly and everything. But you just learn how to deal with it. You have no choice. You just deal with it. That's it. It's there. Nothing you can do about it. You can't change people. Either they have to develop a relationship with the Lord or not. And I think that's really the key. But a lot of people are going to find out that there ain't no black and a white heaven. It's... you're going to have to learn how to fit in or don't fit at all. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. It's alive. Prejudice, racism, it's alive and well. Everybody's not like that, however. Everybody's not like that, but the ones that are mess it up for everybody else.
I would agree. Do you remember there being any black-owned businesses when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah, because, you know, that's how the blacks survived. First of all, Jefferson Street was nothing but black, but then in East Nashville on Main Street, there were several black businesses. There was a black drugstore, there were mm-hmm. doctors and things like that. There was, I don't know. I know at one time wasn't alive when that happened, but, you know, my grandfather had a dry cleaners and he also had a restaurant at one time. Mm-hmm. And there were black-owned businesses, you know, in East Nashville as well as on, you know, in I didn't know that much about South Nashville, but there were places in South Nashville, too. I know barbecue place. What was it called? Brown's Barbecue. Mm-hmm. I remember Daddy used to go out there just to get that barbecue. Mm-hmm. So they were black-owned businesses. That's basically, that's all we knew. There were, we weren't allowed to go to Centennial Park and places like that. So there was a place called Sunset Park that when blacks went somewhere, that's where they went. There was another place. I can't think of it. It was out Murfreesboro Road. Before you got to Rutherford County, and it was over to the left. I can't think of it. Now it's just a whole bunch of homes and stuff over there. And where that lake is. What is it? What's the name of the lake?
Percy Priest?
Yeah. Yeah. There used to be a park over there. Restful Acres. That's what it was called.
Restful Acres.
Restful Acres. And it was property and it was owned by black people. But mm-hmm. in high school, I mean, whatever, when we had parties or picnics or whatever, we went to those places. Mm-hmm. We were not allowed to go to...
You weren't allowed to Centennial?
Mm-mm. Wow. And then I remember when Fred Douglas Park, my daddy was, he had something called the East National Community Club, and they did a lot of things to help in East Nashville. And I remember they had I don't know what they did with it, because Fred Douglas Park is not there anymore. They said it got flooded.
Mm.
And I didn't know it until this year, and I went back and I said, where's the park? It was a building and everything. And it's gone, but when the old Fred Douglas Park is where, you know, Ellington Parkway is?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And Cleveland Street?
Yeah.
That used to be a park under there.
Oh,
that was Fred Douglas Park.
Okay.
And my daddy used to show movies and stuff down there. Oh, cool. He used to do everything, you know, a lot of stuff for East Nashville. He had a lot of people that participated in it. And all that's gone. What were we talking about?
So what I was going to say is, like, so when... Do you remember, like, what happened, like, I guess, to some of the black-owned businesses, like, when integration hit? Like, did, like, things change?
I'm thinking Consumer Drugstore is still there. The folks died out, I guess.
Stuff is affected.
I don't know what is there now. Consumer Drugstore may still be there at, is it 6th and Main or 7th and Main? 7th and Main. It may still be there, but I'm not sure, because Doc... Oh, I knew his name until I thought of it. What was his name? I don't think he's still alive, but that used to be a black drugstore. I know that, and there were little corner stores. Most of the corner stores, though, were Jewish people or something, because mm-hmm. I know one was Wise, and that was on, can't think of the name of the street, but whatever. We used to have corner stores,
mm-hmm.
and they were all white on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember any... The only black store that I remember was Odie's, and that was out on 18th and Jefferson.
Okay.
I don't know if Odie's is still there or not. I think they own that little strip area now, a little strip mall-like area.
Okay.
But,
trying to picture.
Most of the black owns were Jefferson Street, but there was a few in East Nashville.
Yeah.
And like I said, there was Restful Acres, which was owned by blacks, and Sunset Park, which we were allowed to go to. And then Fred Douglas, whenever Fred Douglas, I don't know how long Fred Douglas was there, but we went to Fred Douglas Park. And then when they made that viaduct going across the Ellington Parkway, and before Ellington Parkway was even there, then they brought the other, what was that called? It's another, maybe that's why they don't have the Fred Douglas anymore, because the other center that's across the Cleveland Street Park,
mm-hmm.
that's Cleveland Park, that's what it is. So, I don't know, but I guess they decided not to rebuild Fred Douglas. Wow, that's interesting. Well, I don't know. Them barbecue places, I think one is still there over on Lishy Avenue and Cleveland Street. Cantrell's. Some people may pronounce it Cantrell. It's still there, I think. I don't know.
I don't know it.
But most of the businesses in East Nashville were white. But there were a few blacks.
Okay. So nowadays, what is, before you said you always had like dinner together with the family, is that something you do now, or is there one big meal that you tend
when
to have
when I was
together?
Growing up, we sat down and ate the table. I cook dinner and everybody just eats and basically go back in the family room and eat.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that awful? And even when I have... Like this past year, I had Thanksgiving dinner here at my house, and all my kinfolk on my mama's side came down. And we still didn't eat at the table. I mean, some people ate the table. As you see, my table is small, so
yeah.
We just ate everywhere. We ate everywhere, but we still have family gatherings.
Yeah, yeah.
My husband has a fish fry for his fraternity every year. He's Omega Psi Phi.
Mm-hmm.
And right here.
Mm-hmm.
And the backyard is full of cars.
Yeah.
Last year we had
got a big space. You call
those things that kids jump on, those big old
moon bounce?
Hair things. The great big things.
Moon castle or the
whatever, all that, yeah.
The floaty thing.
He had that out there for them, and we have about 200 people here that come to the fish fry. And so we still have big gatherings, and so I take advantage of that and invite kinfolk. So it's almost like a family reunion, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of people come. You're more than welcome to come out. So it's always on Labor Day, the Sunday of Labor Day weekend.
Huh.
So you're more than welcome to come.
You've got a great backyard here.
Around 3 o'clock. Yeah, that's one reason I picked this is because of my three sons. Well, I didn't have two sons.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted them to have plenty of room to play in the backyard where I can keep an eye on them.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you.
We could have going back to those trees, but the man, Joe thought the man wanted too much money for that little wedge of land, and he didn't buy it, but I wished he had bought it. It was only $3,000 at the time, but he thought that was too much.
Mm-hmm. Is someone growing something back there? It looks like...
That's just grass for his cows. There are two cows back there.
Oh, funny.
Have you not seen the cows?
Uh-oh, I haven't seen them.
Oh, and that is so funny. When my husband's kinfolk come down for the fish fry, and it's kids. They go down to the fence, and that last year they went down to the fence, and they were looking at the cow. I said, "What's happening?" And I found out they were down there. They had never seen a live cow before, you know, other than on TV.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were all grown folks, everybody down there looking at the cows.
That's so funny.
Yep.
Well,
and see, at that time, I had apples and stuff that they could throw over there and feed them, because those trees are apple trees and pear trees back there.
That's so cool.
And the cows liked
them. Are those like ones?
Hmm.
Those little guys, the shorter trees?
They're smaller trees, apple trees, and the one that looked like it's leaning, that's a peach tree. But it'll be in June, have its stuff. But I've got pear trees and apple trees.
Huh.
And we didn't know when we came here. We should have spaced them further apart.
Mm-hmm.
And no trees won't get that big. Because just thought, these must have been dwarf trees right here. Well, I don't think so. But anyway.
It's awesome.
We've been here. We moved here in 1980.
Okay. So yeah, you've been here a while.
Yep.
So what have been some of your greatest joys in life?
My children. My grandchildren, when I married my husband.
Yeah.
What else? Traveling. Mm-hmm. What else? Joys. You talking about joys. Getting closer to the Lord, that's been a joy. Knowing, you know, how good he is. That's been a joy. Yeah, that's about it. Traveling. Taking them every year somewhere. I love to do that. That's a joy. Just know that they're happy. Yeah, that's about it.
What have been some of your greatest challenges? And how'd you get through it?
Marriage. Raising children. All the joys.
Yeah.
and working in a prejudiced area. Working, knowing that people don't want you there, but you know, you just make the most of it and ignore them and make the most of it. It's been a challenge. Working with people, period.
Mm-hmm.
Challenge, a challenge every day. Really. But nothing catastrophic.
Yeah.
You know, everything's been, you know, I can do all things through Christ which strengthens me, so. I think my spiritual base, probably the best thing that ever happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I mean, I always felt I had a good spiritual base as when I was growing up. But when I became a Seventh-day Adventist and stopped studying and growing closer to the Lord, that's probably the most profound. Yeah. positive and negative. I mean, it's helped me get through so much.
Yeah.
It's been the best thing that's ever happened to me. And the study and the learning of the prophecies and knowing this what's going to happen, and you don't have to worry about it because God's got it. Hey, that's my spiritual, I guess you would say the best thing is my spiritual growth and development. Probably. Yeah.
When did that, how old were you in that, when you kind of converted or changed?
Okay, well, when I first heard him, I was still in school, in high school, but I didn't join church until I was 21. And that's where it started going before that. You know, really knowing that my grandparents were Seventh-day Adventists really helped me a whole lot, because I was fighting it at first. I didn't want anything to do with it. But when I found out, I said, oh, they weren't so bad. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I said, well, what is this? What is this all about? You right. know, so I started studying. And actually, when I first started studying, it was to find out they were wrong. But the more I studied, the more I found out, hey, especially, and you know, I was history buff.
Right.
I loved social studies and history and all that kind of stuff. And when I went to Lipscomb, we started studying about, was it early civilization? What was that class called? History of early civilization, Western civilization, something like that. And I learned about all the different empires and all that kind of stuff. And then you go to Daniel and you hear about the prophecies, and it had to deal with Babylon and who was next, Syria, and then who was Greece, and then who's next, Rome.
Mm-hmm.
I said, wait a minute, this is history. You know, this is, I said, but this is prophecy. This is predicted. This is going to happen. And it all began to come together for me. And I began to see things where he wanted me to see it. And I thought, oh, wow, this is cool. And I said, well, what about the Sunday thing? I was raised keep Sunday. But we didn't really keep Sunday, did we? We went to church, and that was about it.
Yeah.
And I learned about it. It was something sacred about keeping the Sabbath day holy.
Mm-hmm.
And why? Why should I keep it holy? And I was just, well, you got here, I was working with my kids, teaching them about, you know, why do we keep it holy? Because he created this world. He created it in 6 days, and on the seventh day, he set it aside at his memorial.
Mm.
For us to rest. So first of all, we wouldn't be nuts and kill ourselves overworking. But as a memorial to him, to remember him as our creator, I said, hey, that's what it's all about, is remembering who God is and that he created this world. And we are to show him homage and not to show other folks who decide, hey, I'm going to change this day because that's what I want to do. And that's basically what happened.
Mm-hmm.
The Catholics, you know, thought, hey, we're going to do this. And what's his name, Constantine? Because I think Sunday first was just a holiday, and then in his effort to bring paganism with the church, they chose a day that would bring them together. They would have something in common. And Christ rose on this day. We worship the sun god. They worship the sun god, so we'll make that Sunday. And when I learned all of that, I mean, this is all history. This was history. Right. And I thought, hey. Then when I studied Daniel and Revelation, got me. It was a matter of history.
Yeah.
And I've been stuck ever since.
Yeah.
Gladly.
So before you'd said that you define yourself as black. Why do you prefer that term versus like another term like African American or something like that?
Oh, you know, I came up doing a time doing Black Power. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
why? Okay, I'm stuck right there because since then they've named it, changed it so many times. I don't be bothered. Okay. I'm just sticking with one name. I'm black. The best name would be color, to be quite honest, because we come in all colors. If you saw me and my sisters and my brothers, we're all different colors.
Uh-huh.
If you saw my three sons, they're all different colors. JoJo is dark brown skin, Brian is light skin, and Tim is in between. We're colored, really.
Uh-huh.
But colored at one time was a derogatory term, because that's the term that white folks, the good name, since they couldn't call us nigger, they called us colored.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it was taken back then. Negro never really stuck, but actually we're really Negroes,
mm-hmm.
which means black.
Right, right, right.
So that's I just stick with black. And all this other stuff, African American, well, all blacks don't come from Africa. Some blacks live in the South Pacific. You know, there are blacks everywhere. Everybody, you know, there's the Aborigines. They consider themselves blacks.
Right.
Hawaiians, they consider themselves black. I guess we all eventually came from the same place.
Yeah.
We all came from Adam, so whatever.
Yeah.
But I just pick black because, you know, they changed too much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've changed it 2 or 3 times since black. And I just remain black.
Mm-hmm.
I just stay black. I'm black. Because if you've got, you know, the old adage was if you got one drop of black blood in you, you're black. That's it. I have friends. You saw my granddaughter. I have a granddaughter. She doesn't look black.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a friend who's let's see, Deborah's white, Henry's black. Their children are mixed. But their grandchildren on the son's side look white. The grandchildren on the daughter's side look black. We're black. I know people who have broken up when they found out they had black in their family because they were scared their child's going to come up black. Whatever.
That's okay.
I know a lady, she was 70 in Venice. She had straight hair like you, but she was not my complexion. She was darker than me, but she said everybody else in her family was white.
Hmm.
So that lets you know that somewhere down the line, there was some black in her family. Yeah. So, you know, hey, we're all mixed. I had a lady at the hospital when I worked at Riverside, and I looked at her and I said, this is a white lady done at this black hospital. Hmm. Because Riverside was a black hospital. Yeah. And I finally got enough nerve to ask her, are you black or white? She said, I'm black, but I have to pass a white for a minute a day just to keep food on my table. And she was from Louisiana.
Hmm.
And her hair was long, and from right to here was gray, and then from here down was blonde. So I didn't know what the woman was. She had been dying of hair, obviously. Okay. But anyway, I thought, interesting. Then my sister had a friend. He's so mixed up now. And he's old. And his name is Jimmy Hurt. And Jimmy claimed that he's Indian and white, but Jimmy was black. His mother was black. She went to Fisk. Mm-hmm. His father, they say, was white, and he worked at Fisk.
Mm-hmm.
But Jimmy had a hard time dealing with who he was because he didn't look black.
Mm-hmm.
He was olive complexion. He had straight hair. And he had a hard time. He wound up marrying somebody white, I think, several times. But I'm black, and I know who my mom and my daddy are, and I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
You know, but like I said, I've got 2 grandchildren who are mixed, and they're white.
Yeah.
But I got 4 that obviously are black.
Yeah.
But who cares?
Yeah.
You know, God don't care. He cares about your character.
Yeah.
You know, you're built to choose right over wrong. But anyway, whatever. I forgot what your question was now.
No, that answered it. This is almost a little repetitive, but...
I tend to birdwalk, as you can tell.
No, it's good, though, because, I mean, she hit other ones. Might be a little bit repetitive, but, like, thinking about how black is defined now versus... Is black defined differently now than it was when you were growing up, do you think?
Is it defined different?
Like, black. I don't know, like, I guess, like, in the public sense, like, to call someone black, does that mean something different now than it would when you were growing up?
Well, I think people, modern-day people prefer, what is it, African-American.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think anybody would take offense to it. And if you say nigger, you'd find it. I don't think it's ever changed. Although it's always been a difference between black saying nigger and white saying nigger. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. But it's offensive if somebody white says it, but it's not if somebody black says mm-hmm. it. Don't ask me why. I think it's because we were accustomed to it. And it didn't mean anything coming from us, but when it came from the other race, mm-hmm. it was prejudicial. So.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't think saying black today, it means anything. It basically speaks from what generation I came from.
Right.
You know, and that I don't keep up.
Yeah.
And don't care, and they don't care anything.
So are you involved with any church or community groups, organizations?
Not really. I mean, church.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, I'm over, I can just tell you what, I'm over the women's ministry department for my church, and I'm mm-hmm. over the food service department of my church. But as far as being active in anything in the community, never have been.
Mm-hmm.
Never wanted to be.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's coming from daddy. When the daddy was active, so I don't know, he was just a little bit... hard on I think I'm the only one in my family that was scared to do anything because I thought Daddy would get me, but my sister and them, they weren't scared. Mm-hmm. My brothers weren't scared, but I got, you know, I came along the last one and I was scared to do anything, but I've never been like NAACP. I never joined that. My husband is. He's a member mm-hmm. of it. Just not sororities and all that kind of mess. I never was interested in that. You yeah. know, just different. It just never. I didn't like the snobbishness of sororities.
Oh, yeah.
No. And all that. And a lot of people, and it may not be that way, but from looking on the outside in, that's what it looked like. I thought, you know, you should get to know everybody, not just a few people, you know, but whatever.
Yeah. So,
And so this is my last question. But if you had a specific message that you'd want to, like, tell, like, younger people and youth in the community, younger generations coming up, what would it be?
First, have a relationship with the Lord. Get an education. Always do your best. Put God first in your life. Mm-hmm. Can't go wrong. That's all I can think of. On top of my head.
All right. So, is there any other information you want to include we haven't talked about yet?
You mean you didn't cover everything?
No, I mean, I'm just saying, if there's anything else you want to talk about.
I don't know. I can't think. I did a while ago, but it's gone. Let's see, if I don't think about it, if I don't say stuff then, it's gone. It's gone. It's gone. Okay. Just always do your best and, you know, consider others. Be considerate of others at all times and try to love everybody and, you know, just, I don't know. There's so much. Try not to take life so hard. Don't let things get you down. Mm-hmm. You know, just and with all that, you got to have God in the center of your life. I'm sorry, you got to have it. And not something, but someone, God. And if you got Him there, He'll help you through everything you need. He's got every answer you need right there in His book. And if it's not in the book, the Holy Spirit will teach it to you. So have a develop a relationship with the Lord. That's probably the most important thing, because if you do that, you can get through anything. Mm-hmm. And it's got me through my marriage. It's got me through my children. It's getting me through my grandchildren. They don't live here. Mm-hmm. But they stay here a lot, so.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Cool. Yeah. That's about it, I guess.
Well, thank you again for participating, and please feel free to contact us if you have any questions or wish to add your contribution. Yeah, well, I mean, thank you so much.
Okay. I'm glad you came here, because I didn't know it was going to take this long.
Oh, yeah. It goes pretty...